I just got to mention that my order from Hooptown, it's on its way.
Yeah.
And you need to restock the XL, the lightweight hooded pullovers. I had to go double XL. I'm going to have to grow into it.
It's bulking up. It's for winter. You know what I mean? Coming out of winter into spring, we're all a little heavier than we'd like to be. You know I am.
From Hooptown to your town, we have Matt Santangelo, former Zag on the podcast, number one in assists. Actually, number two, Perkins got him a couple years ago. What do we talk about on the podcast, Big Ben?
We got some Bulldog banter with Matt. He talks about those Cinderella runs in the NCAA tournament to the Elite Eight and then Sweet 16. Also about what he's doing for the community of Spokane around Hooptown and Hoopfest and the current Zags program. Stick around as we get into some Bulldog banter with Matt Santangelo, WSD Podcast, right now.
So what did you think of when you saw an email from us and the title of it had Todd Wishnig in the subject line?
Well, I was like, trying to figure it out. And then you all gave me so many great like connectors in the email. It was like, All right. Like, stop. I'm not going to be all this name dropping. It's ridiculous. So, no, it was, it's always nice. And I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, to do these things and get out and tell some stories and relive some of the glory days. It's always fun.
Yeah, it is. And Big Ben and I, we met in New York as coworkers doing like IT software sales, but we hit it off because I'm from Northern California. He's from Seattle. And all we wanted to do was talk about the Pac-12 and WCC. And so we would go out, hang out at bars, like just trying to watch ESPN 8 to see like the Zags play the Broncos. And we bonded over that. And then we just said, we should do a podcast that just focuses on West Coast sports. Because if you're in another time zone, like you're lost on the coverage. So that's the impetus of this.
Yeah, good for you, because we need it. I mean, and we got – now it's been better. We're actually, you know, down a little bit. It's a good thing we got the Zags out here representing the whole coast. But, you know, we need it because it's always got that East Coast bias. Like people just don't talk about us, and they need to be talking about us because we got good sports out here.
The WCC isn't the old Big East, but we'll get there.
No, but it's getting better. It's getting better.
And I was that you taking a shot at the Cougs?
Now that I've been at Hoopfest, as I stumble over my words, like we're like basketball without borders here, man. Everyone's welcome at Hoopfest. So Cougs too. And it's actually, you know, after a long winters here too, like when the Cougs are better, like life is better. When football's better, when basketball's better, like it's better in Spokane. So we want that to happen as much as we focus on the Zags around here. We want all the schools around here to be good.
Before we start with your time in Central Catholic, I might say that I don't know if the Huskies could field the 3-on-3 team that would win a Hoopfest tournament right now.
Well, we a couple years ago, we actually started an alumni game right when TBT was starting. And so we started an alumni game here at GU. It was actually Pargo. Pargo started it for us. And we'd run it on Friday nights at Hoopfest as kind of another attraction, something else going on the weekend. And so our second year, we went UW versus GU. And if we got a good UW squad, and Gonzaga won. I mean, it was a competitive game. Justin Dennett went off for the Huskies. So, but it's always good. And it's good that they're playing again, too, because now, you know, Zags and Cougars are off, but Zags and Huskies are back on. I think Fuey should play everybody, but that's my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Matt Santangelo, we're going to call this Bulldog Banter, K-Win and Big Ben, WSD Podcast. Matt, let's go back to your high school days. Central Catholic in Portland, not too far from the old Rose Garden and world-renowned Voodoo Donuts. rivals in the area, Jesuit High, I think the year.
Yeah, he was younger than me. Yeah. By a few years. So, yes. And where did he end up going to college? Did he go to Arizona?
No, he... Yeah, it was the lesser known, probably even 5'10". He would dominate the rec at WSU. That's how I know him.
then I feel better not knowing.
Some famous alum that went to Central Catholic. You had Joey Harrington and then Ryan Nall, who's now in the playoffs with the Bears. And then your running mate, Michael Doliak, where you guys won a state championship in 94. You beat Clackamas 56-54. Talk about the high school days with Michael, who ended up going on to play in the NBA.
Yeah, Big Daddy Doliak. So Big Daddy Doliak is a good story because he came in at 5'11", left at 6'11". Couldn't walk and chew gum until his junior year. So he was a year ahead of me school-wise, even though he was a year younger. I was a year younger too, academic or age-wise for my grade. But Doliak was just a workhorse and went on to have a phenomenal career. I mean, Final Four and national runner-up at Utah under Majerus, and then 10 years in the NBA with a backing up Shaq when D-Wade and Shaq won a championship in Miami. And always wanted to be a brain surgeon. Can you imagine 7 foot hand trying to mess around with your brain? Was smarter than he was, he was a basketball player, but just loved the game and loved the camaraderie. But we had a good squad. You know, we weren't, always throughout my whole entire basketball career, kind of underdog, always chose the middle of the pack. That's how we were in the Mount Hood Conference my sophomore year, my first year on varsity. And we just kind of overachieved. And then my junior year, we won state, as you mentioned. Senior year, we finished eighth in state again. And then that created some opportunities to go on beyond high school and keep playing ball.
Yeah. You talk about the recruiting process, because I listened to you with Dick Au, and I think both of you self-proclaimed that you were underappreciated, potentially due to height. But what schools did recruit you? And talk to us about the role that John Stockton might have played in having you get to Gonzaga.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say I was at least not underappreciated. My final five schools were Oregon, Stanford, Rice in Houston, and Northwestern in Chicago. I wasn't smart enough to know what a Stanford degree would have done for me, so I probably would go back and change it all up. But I was tongue in cheek here a little bit, but I wanted to play ball. Like I felt like I put myself with those final five schools really strong academically, Gonzaga maybe being the weakest. Gonzaga, Oregon, Stanford, Rice, Northwestern are world class. And certainly Gonzaga and Oregon are great schools too. But I wanted to play ball. And so I remember, Coach Fitzgerald, who was the head coach at the time at GU, and Coach Few recruited me as an assistant coach. And I remember Coach Fitzgerald sitting in my living room with Coach Few and my parents in Portland, and he said, "Hey, no one's bigger than the program, no one." But he said, "If I had a basketball, I would give it to you and say we're going to go where you're going to take us." And so, now as a grown man, I realize he probably said that to every kid in every living room he was ever in. But I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. I was like, because no one's bigger than the program, right? No one's bigger than your family, no one's bigger than your neighborhood, no one's bigger than the community as an individual. However, he was going to give me influence on where the program was going to go, and he was going to give me a chance to play. And so that's been a theme that's kind of played out throughout my life, but that was ultimately my decision to come to GU. And yeah, when I showed up on my recruiting trip, you're playing with John Stockton and pick up ball, and this was, he was still, active in the NBA at that time. He became really influential while my time and experience at GU. But not as influential on the recruiting process, and ultimately chose GU. And, when I was leaving GU and even looking back at it now, 20 years later, sitting here talking to you two about it, is just a kind of a ode to how remarkable that whole program is, experience was. But I couldn't dream big enough to what I couldn't have said, sat down as a high school senior, said, "Hey, this is how I want my college career to go." I could have said, "Yeah, I dream about playing in the NBA," but I couldn't have actually had words to describe the experience we had at GU. During my 5 years there. And so, I don't have a Stanford degree, but I got a story to tell. So I don't, I still need help buying the beer at the bar, but someone's usually there to buy it for me. So I don't know.
There you go. Now, coming up was the Pac-10. Was that what you were aiming for? And then as a result of how it played out, you decided to go the Zag route?
Yeah, I remember I sent my own recruiting tape to, Duke and North Carolina and Notre Dame. And, I sent it around the country. So I was, naive enough to dream big. So I was dreaming big. But the Pac-10 was certainly, where we were looking. And I have to send a shout out to Coach Turgeon, the head coach at Maryland, because he was the assistant coach at Oregon at the time. And Oregon had offered me a scholarship my sophomore year in high school. And so by the time I was getting ready to commit before my senior year, I sat down with Turge, and Turge said, "Hey, we still have the scholarship for you, but I don't think this is the best situation for you." They had a couple of junior college guards coming in. And that, again, with years of perspective, that's him telling me like, you're not good enough or you don't fit in or whatever. Like at the time, he was shooting straight with me and just said, hey, it's not the best spot. And so that kind of, you know, took Oregon out of the mix for me. And then Stanford was interesting because, you know, Coach Montgomery, and they had such a great program there. But it was really system. You know, you throw the ball inside of the big guy maybe throws it back out to you. Maybe you get to shoot it then. And that really wasn't a style of play that I was attracted to. Now I understood they had to play that way in order to be competitive in the Pac-10. But that wasn't the way I wanted to play. So, you know, at that time, I didn't necessarily feel slighted or I should have been recruited, you know, to hire more schools. Like I felt pretty grateful to be in the position I was, to have that attention from the schools I did have attention and the options that were ahead of me.
You obviously cemented yourself in Gonzaga lore. You're still the all-time leader in assists, even with former NBA all-time leader in assists attending the same school. So it turned out okay, I think. And you obviously get free beer at Jack and Dan's, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, the restaurants open back up. After COVID, we're going to have to see how it works out.
Now it's just free Postmates.
Yeah.
So 1997, you're co-winner of the NCAA or WCC Newcomer Freshman Year of the Year Award. You started most of your games the sophomore year, but you didn't make the NCAA tournament. I got a quick story. My aunt was the principal at Lewis and Clark High School there in Spokane, and she called me one day. She's like, Ben, the Zags are going to be good. And I didn't know what she meant, but then we went to Zags Hoop Camp. I went for 5 years, and I looked around, and I'm like, these guys are big. They play good. They're sound. And I could kind of get the feeling. I have to ask, did you know that that team going into your junior year was going to be special or as special as it was?
We had some indication, I think. So let's step back and look at the coaching progression. So when my freshman year, we were under Coach Fitzgerald, kind of the old guard, doesn't ever get mentioned in this whole, it's like Dick Davies at Santa Clara, like never gets mentioned in the whole run-up of this Gonzaga empire that they now have, which is unfortunate. But he was my coach for 2 years. Then I had Coach Dan Munson for my sophomore year and junior year, who's now at Long Beach State, left UU, went to Minnesota, now is back at Long Beach State. And then Coach Few. Coach Munson and Coach Few were there the whole time as assistant coaches. So when we made that transition from the team you're talking about, the 97-98 team, the year before the Elite Eight, that was probably the best GU team I was on. Top to bottom, the year we didn't make it, we went to the NIT. But that was Coach Munson's first year as head coach, so kind of the younger coaches took over, Coach Munson, Coach Few, and Coach Greer, who's now at Colorado State. And so what they did more than anything else is they said, why not us? That's where the whole mantra of anyone, anywhere, like we would go play, it didn't matter. Like, because at that point, Gonzaga was kind of the, you know, Coach Fitzgerald was like trying to just get to 20 wins. So you'd play, you know, the School of the Blind and the Sisters of the Poor and like, you know, all just to try to get to 20 wins. And you'd mix in one or two, you know, good teams. But what Coach Munson did and Coach Few and Coach Greer, they said, let's go play. So like my sophomore year, this 97-98 team, we go to the top of the World Classic. We beat Tulsa, Mississippi State, Clemson. The next weekend, we're at Michigan State. You know, we go to Kansas to start my junior year. I mean, they just said, let's go play. Now, luckily, we had enough talent and enough toughness that we went in and had some success. So to come back around to the answer to your question is by the time we got to 98-99, we had an inkling of what we were. We had been battle tested. We went and played some big schools. We had, you know, we don't play the name on the front of this jersey. Like we were Hoosiers, right? We went in and measured the rims and we said, screw this. We're going to win. And if you beat us, you're going to know you earned it. Like just good hard-nosed basketball. And so that 97-98 team, we win conference and we lose to USF San Francisco in the conference tournament championship. And we thought we had enough of a resume to get an at-large bid. Well, of course, back then, West Coast Conference wasn't a two-bid league. And so we felt like we got snubbed. And so all that summer going into 98-99, it was just like, don't leave anything to chance. Like win the conference, win the conference tournament, get that large bid, and then see what happens. And so we were able to do that. You know, we came back with that attitude of like, these are the things we need to do. And so when we finally get that bid and we go through Selection Sunday, it was like, you know, it could have been like, we're done. You know, I mean, if you win at that point in the West Coast Conference, you could have gone 0-25 and won those three games in the West Coast Conference tournament and gone to the NCAA tournament and had a successful season. you could go 25-0, lose those games and not go. And you had, it was all about the NCAA tournament and that one bid. And so, you know, when we got there, that was the Quentin Hall, my backcourt mate at that time in the 99 team, was one like, let's go make some noise. Let's make some noise. That was the whole thing. It's like, we can't just be happy getting here. And then the rest right. just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. I remember it was 98, 99 season. And then that was when you went to the Elite Eight, right?
Yep.
So I was going out to Tampa. My brother lived there at that time. And we got tickets to the Final Four. And we were all excited because, you know, Duke, it was Michigan State, it was Ohio State. And there's just one more team. And it was UConn versus Gonzaga. And I remember I was conflicted because I was like, I want the underdog. But wait a minute, there are rivals. They beat up on us. But it was a great game. And like, it was this close to like seeing you guys get there on that Rip Hamilton shot. What can you tell us, you know, about that game?
Yeah, well, so the Florida game, the Sweet 16 game, was the Casey Calvary tip-in. Hall with the runner, Casey Calvary with the tip-in, which is in Gonzaga folklore, is, you know, part of the legend. And so I remember this kind of sums up the Connecticut game too, because we're going crazy, we're ecstatic, we're running around. We get into the locker room, and Coach Munson comes in, and he's out of breath. And he's trying to get us kind of focused, because in 2 days we're playing for the Final Four. You know, like, this is uncharted territory. You know, of course, all athletes are like, "Hey, you got to act like you've been there before." Well, we've never been there before. Like, we're kidding me. And so we're going. And so he comes and he's like, "And we just gotta." And then he kind of pauses and he goes, "I don't know what we got to do." He's like, and then it's kind of go crazy again, you know. But that's what made that time so special, is that there was no expectation. We were Cinderella. Like, we were defying odds. We were just on this wonderful roller coaster ride and trying to enjoy every moment of it. And that's how we approached all those games, junior and senior. And so going into Connecticut, it was no different. It was like, we'd already played Stanford, which was the 2 seed. That was the round of 32 game. And we knew we had to play great in order just to be competitive. That's kind of how we have to do everything right just to have a chance. And we did everything right and had success. So it was like Florida, we didn't play as well, but it was a little bit more of our kind of game that we could be a little, you know, not quite, you know, A plus just to have a chance. But going into Connecticut, it was just like, we just got to be ourselves, just play hard, be ourselves, just give us a chance to win down the stretch. And so that's what we did, you know. And so obviously being one possession away 20 plus years later, you look back on it like, dang, you know, it was really, really close to being really epic. But then you kind of go like, but it was stinking special anyway. So, I mean, we left it all on the floor. You know, I made some mistakes. I didn't play well. Richie Fromm didn't shoot the ball well. But we had a chance to win it down the stretch. And I don't know what else you can ask for. You know, someone's got to lose. And we just happened to lose that one.
And you lost to the eventual national champion.
Yeah.
Right.
And which is kind of like, I don't know if I'm supposed to feel good about that. But I was like,
My question was, like, locker room post game, is it like a feeling of accomplishment still? Like, these guys returned dang near everyone from their team the year prior. Right.
And I think, you know, one of the comments that Calhoun said, Coach Calhoun at UConn, was when he was reflecting after they won the championship, he alluded to our game as the toughest one of the bunch. So of course that feels good. You know, he went back, I mean, and says like, hey, it was the closest game. It was the toughest one. So all that stuff kind of feels good because, again, at the end of the day, we weren't supposed to be there. We had nothing to lose. So you want to, you know, garner that respect and know that you deserve to be there. And so when you start to get that type of affirmation, of course it makes you kind of swell up with pride. And then looking at what you've done over the stretch, how long it took him to get back to that Elite Eight level, you know, also makes it, you know, special as well, on both fronts, that we weren't, you know, that we were able to accomplish that so early on, and that the program wasn't a flash in the pan. That makes you feel good on both sides.
Now, Matt, wrapping up your collegiate career, did the end of that game leave you ultimately hungry to start the next season? Almost like the next day, you, Casey, and Richie were all returning.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you guys must've been in the gym pretty quickly after that one.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, it's obviously very sour, and because I didn't, you know, it's one thing too to go out and play well and lose. I played awful. I was 1 for 9. I had 2 points. Ricky Moore still haunts me in my dreams. You know, like, so all that stuff. I've never actually gone back and watched the game. You know, and so, but I it's a hard one. But yeah, you were right back at it. And our big, you know, if 97, 98 to this team, 98, 99 was, you know, don't leave it up to anyone else. Control what you can control. Go out and win the games you need to win. 98, 99 to 99, 2000, my senior year, was all about don't be a one-hit wonder. Like, we cannot be a one-hit wonder. We are a good program. This thing is building to something greater than what we can even imagine. And that was our motto. So, yeah, we got back in the gym. We scheduled big. I mean, that summer, Duke canceled us. We were supposed to go to Duke. They canceled us late in the summer because we were too dangerous if we show up. You know, I mean, we're supposed to be the Sisters of the Poor, and we come in as a top 25 team all of a sudden. Like, so they canceled us. And so we were
we
just wanted that respect, and we were hungry. You know, that's for our group, that hunger was, that chip on the shoulder was real. Like, we played angry, and we wanted to prove to you, like I said, if you beat us, you were going to respect us, and we were going to beat you more than you beat us. And that was just kind of our mentality.
And you left the program in good hands after, you know, you had Casey, Dan, and then Blake Stepp coming in. That had to feel good. Back to your earlier comment, like, we're building something here.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it was really weird those first, you know, several years, because every year was a superlative. You know, mm-hmm. we were at Cinderella Elite Eight. We were able to back it up with a Sweet 16. The Sweet 16 run was really nice because we beat St. John's, back to our beginning of our conversations, the West Coast versus East Coast. When we beat Stanford, the 2 seed, they're like, who cares? It's two West Coast teams. They don't even know how to play basketball, right?
Yeah.
But then we went straight to the Mecca and beat up on St. John's our senior year. And so it was like, who is this little upstart Gonzaga from Spokane, Washington? Like, what's happening? And so that one, again, it was just like every year we were kind of chipping away or climbing up the mountain. Every year you were climbing up the mountain. So then Dickout happened. You know, Casey had a monster senior year. They go back to the Sweet 16. So you go Elite Eight, Sweet 16, Sweet 16. Like, that's rare to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then Dickow's All-American year, number 3 in the country, I think, you know, undefeated for a lot of it. Didn't have a great NCAA tournament, but still is like first team All-American. And so I was like, that's another step. And then Blake Stepp lost in Arizona in the second round of the NCAA tournament, was a double overtime. And it's considered the greatest second round game ever. So even when
game
you
was
lose
awesome.
In the second, yeah, but even when you lose in the second round, it's the greatest game ever, you know? So every year, like, then Adam Morrison happened, and it just kept going and going and going. And it clearly it's still going and going and going as they continue to break through this glass ceiling of what can be accomplished, which makes it all the more special. And I just think, you know, not just leaving the program in good hands, but the way the program has just been able to grow and push, and how people like a Dickow is a good example. Even before my time, Jeff Brown would be a good example. He's back in Nash's years. You know, guys that transferred back and they kind of see the value of what it means to be a Zag, and see the value of Spokane, and see the value of Hooptown USA, and the support we give for basketball, and say, like, God, Spokane in the winter, that makes sense to me. I'm going to go there. That doesn't make sense to anybody. But they choose Spokane, they choose Gonzaga, they choose the culture, they choose the university, the values, and they just keep raising the bar.
And Matt, if you had to summarize your time at Gonzaga in one sentence, what would it be?
Ooh, one sentence. Unimaginable. One word. I couldn't dream big enough to know, you know, 20 years later I'd be having a conversation about it. And this is a daily conversation in Spokane. You know, you bump into someone, it's a part of our fabric. Mm-hmm. Now being involved with Hoop Fest and, you know, our AAU programs and just basketball at the community level, you know, there's not a day like it's basketball, 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 which is a good thing. It's hard, but it's a good thing. And so all that kind of, you know, stems from my childhood, what I value for the sport, but has been made possible because Spokane believes in this thing. It believes in Gonzaga. It believes in Whitworth. It believes in our high school basketball. It believes in the sport, which is really fortunate for.
Now, if we transition into this year's current Gonzaga basketball team, they're undefeated, ranked number 1, big game Thursday night against my Broncos. But before the preseason, they were undefeated. They beat 4 ranked teams, Kansas, Iowa, West Virginia, and Virginia, by, I think, an average of 12.5 points. Yep. What are your thoughts on the Gonzaga basketball team so far this year?
Yeah, so I'm impressed. I mean, I'm a total fan without question. I always used to tease the university because you know, they don't have to ever create any new marketing material because every year is Coach Few's best team. They just recycle it. You know, next year it's Coach Few's best team. That's Coach Few's best team. It's Coach Few's best team. Well, I think they're going to have to pick something new next year because this year might be Coach Few's best team. This year is really, really, really remarkable in a lot of different ways. Of course, the level of the recruiting. I mean, it's easy to look at Jalen Suggs and kind of how that changed the dynamic of who chooses to come to GU and the recruiting story. But even more so in that, the leadership of Corey Kispert, the development of Corey Kispert, you know, Drew Timmy's personality, the way the depth, the way people are sacrificing their roles. But the thing I love, I just love how they play. I mean, it's like Golden State a couple years ago. I mean, the ball is moving all over the place. Everyone's a weapon. It hardly ever stops. And they score so fast. So, like, their style of play to me this year, they just don't have a ton of at least their weaknesses haven't been exposed yet. West Virginia is probably the closest one with really kind of twin towers inside. But other than that, it just seems like any style of play, any style, any team, anywhere, they're going to roll it out and have a really good chance of being successful. This team is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So they're playing faster. They're playing more up-tempo. They're unselfish. You mentioned Jalen Suggs. What can you tell our listeners about him and what makes him so special?
Yeah, better than I thought. Better than hyped. And he was hyped coming in only because of his composure for a young, you know, for a freshman. I think his composure is just really remarkable. And then especially in these last couple games, and as we get into conference, where no offense to the Broncos, the competition may not be as as strong, even though San Francisco played him tough the other night. That was the game. And conference has its own set of challenges. But really unselfish. Like, the maturity of Jalen Suggs to me has been really what has stood out as much as his athleticism. And the way he passes the ball, and I'm not talking like the highlight pass he had the other night. I'm talking about pocket passes and over the top pick and rolls to the other side. It's just things that you're just like, oh my gosh, you like even watch it on TV, go like, you see it, but most people can't deliver it. And he's already seen it and starting to deliver it as you take mention of it or take notice of it. I think that one's really, really impressive. And then they got so many guys that there's not a lot of pressure on anyone to do it, you know? So like, it's a really ideal situation for him because he can be unselfish. He can be, you know, he can just be the quarterback, the floor general. He doesn't have to do everything because this group is so dynamic on so many spots, even at the point guard spot. I mean, he's basically sharing time with two other point guards in Cook and Nembhard. I mean, he doesn't have to bring the ball down every time. Half the time they can't get the ball out of Drew Timmy's hands anyway. So I don't know why you even need a point guard. So
you mentioned Drew Timmy. How has his game evolved from last year to this year?
More touches. Yeah, more touches. He's got a signature thing now. I literally think it's more touches because he's always had the swag. That's one thing that even while watching in his high school highlight tapes and high school footage, he had a ton of attitude in a good way. Like he likes to talk trash. He likes to banter. He likes to get in people's heads, but he also likes to smile and have a good time out there. Like, it seems like he's having fun. So I just think for him, it's just more chance, just more opportunity. Because he's so good with his feet. He's so good under the basket. He's not above the rim. He's under the rim, but he's just so dang crafty and he's fearless.
So Corey Kispert, you might have to correct me on this. He got a record. Was it 8 threes in one game?
Nine
threes in one game. All right.
He tied Dick Allen Pangos. Kevin Pangos as well had nine.
All right. Now, if we had an NBA-style three-point all-star game shootout, Kispert, Richie Fromm, and Dick Gow, who's winning that, in your opinion? Ball racks and everything.
I would say Kispert because of shooting style. If we're going strict NBA, traditional NBA three-point shootout, I'd go Kispert because of shooting style. Richie's was a little high. I don't know how that works in the off the rack. Kispert is still right in the pocket and up. You got to put Pangos in that one for just straight consistency of mechanics. Pangos was pretty sick that way too. I didn't think Kispert was going to play like this. I knew he was going to be a great leader. I knew he was going to be a great zag. I knew he was going to be a great senior. I didn't have vision on what he's doing right now. I mean, it is unbelievable how well he is playing and how easy he's making it all look.
Yeah, and he's more athletic than people think, right? Like, he's doing a lot of other stuff out there where I thought, and shame on me, I thought he was just a shooter. But, like, watching him this year, I'm like, no, he's got more to his game than just, you know, hitting three-pointers.
Without question. I mean, the way he's getting to the rim, right and left-handed, you know, they haven't even pulled him up, which I think is going to be a weapon, too, because he's such a big guard, at least at the collegiate level. And the thing is, you don't have to run anything for him. That's what's really unique about this squad. Is, I mean, they obviously, Gonzaga's offense is complex, and it's a lot of read and react. But it's not, you don't have to call a lot of plays for him. He's getting everything in transition. He's putting the ball on the floor, going to create himself, and he's just absolutely knocking down three. So it just makes the game, it looks really easy. I know it's not, but he makes it look really easy and a lot of fun to play.
All right. A couple more questions here. Mark Few, I think he's in his 22nd year now. How has his coaching style evolved over the 22 years, in your opinion?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm in a unique spot. I'm in a unique spot for a couple different ways, but one of them is with Gonzaga basketball, I'm pre-national attention and post-national attention, meaning, you know, when I got started, no one knew about Gonzaga or anything else. When I left, you know, we started to get that Cinderella moniker. And then with Coach Few, you know, I've known as an assistant coach who recruited me, and obviously then an early on head coach, and now the future Hall of Famer, winningest coach in college basketball, percentage-wise, active coach. And so kind of a unique perspective over that whole time. I also did the radio for about 7 of 8 seasons. I was on the color broadcast, color commentary broadcast. So I got to call the national championship run and all that. I found it really, really interesting in 2015, which was the second time the school went to the Elite Eight with Kevin Pangos and Gary Bell their senior year. Maybe back up a little further, when they first were the number one seed with Kelly Olynyk and Pangos and Bell, where they went to, and they ended up losing to Wichita State in the second round. But in the first round, Southern took them to the end. And we were in Utah, in Salt Lake, which you'd think would be a pro-Gonzaga crowd. But at about the 8-minute mark in that game, the whole crowd turned on GU because it was before Virginia had lost, right? I mean, never before had one seed lost, and it looked like Gonzaga was on their way to be the first. And so they went through this period of time where Gonzaga was everyone's second favorite team, right? You had your loyal to your alma mater, but we love America's team. Gonzaga plays the right way. They're upstarts. They're all this stuff. And then you went through this period of time where everyone hated GU. They can't win a big game. They can't do anything in March. What are they doing? Even though they were in March every year, you know, oh, it's because their conference sucks. But they're in March every year. And so when that experience happened, where the crowd in Salt Lake City turned on GU because it was just they wanted to see David beat Goliath. It wasn't a GU thing. They just wanted to see the number one seed fall. That one was eye-opening to the program because it was the first time they had the number one seed. And so when they got to be the number one seed again, it was like a breath of fresh air. It's like, well, if we're going to be the number one seed, let's go be the big, bad number one seed. Let's go crush some people. Because it was almost like that first time Gonzaga was apologetic. Like, oh, I know we play in a conference isn't as strong. Oh, I'm so sorry that you selected us as the number one seed. Like, but that's kind of how it felt. And so you've seen the maturity to Coach Few. You've seen that maturity of each step along the way. Oh, this is what it's supposed to feel like. You know, I didn't like the way it felt then when we were the number one seed for the first time. So the second time is like, oh, we're going to go be big, bad number one. We're going to go blow out the first round, and we're setting up for a long run into March. Well, when Coach Few finally got to his first Elite Eight, because the original Elite Eight 99 was under Coach Monson, you almost could feel it. Like, it was like, oh, this is what March is supposed to feel like. You know, this is what the second weekend feels like. This is what the third weekend feels like. And you could kind of see that maturation and that experience just kind of calm everything, where it's like, it's not that big a deal. It's like almost like the pressure was off. The monkey was off his back. He's like, okay, like I understand what I'm supposed to do now. And I think you kind of saw his coaching change as well, to where it wasn't as, it's not as controlled. It wasn't as kind of nervous or tight. And you're seeing it with this team because this team's wide open. You know, they're playing. It's a lot of guys shooting from different places and getting the balls moving fast. And I think all that has been this process of him growing up as a coach having all this success to draw from. And I think it's really remarkable because one of the things I appreciate about the whole Gonzaga experience is that we're like first generation wealth. You know, when we talk about the history of Gonzaga basketball, we're not talking about John Wooden's history or Dean Smith's history or, you know, Judd Heathcote at Michigan State. This is it's Coach Few's story. It's not even history yet. It's his story. He's actively writing it. And for the old dogs, you know, we feel like our fingerprints are on it. So we take obviously great pride and excitement and enthusiasm around it. But it's that kind of that closeness and that consistency throughout all those years that you've been able to watch this thing really grow and really kind of enjoy the ride, especially from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, it's been great to watch, you know, Gonzaga, WCC is now, you know, annually better than the Pac-12 teams, and it's better than the West Coast teams, and now it's nationally ranked and better than everyone else. It's been amazing to see that those steps taken.
Yep, and I think it's interesting too, because if you look at the university side, like the financial resource, you know, like people are really looking for the Gonzaga effect, like how you recreate this, because the university's changed, the identity of the city's changed, all be tied to basketball and tied to the success that Gonzaga's done. And so I think once you saw the West Coast Conference start to really buy into that, because like Pepperdine's like, man, we're not doing that, man. We're going to the beach or whatever. Yeah. Like, Santa Clara's like, I'm trying to write some software, man. I got a startup.
Exactly.
Like, basketball's hard, man. Everyone else is doing startups and that's what we're going to do, you know? So it's like, I don't know what Portland's doing. Portland's just weird. And that's my hometown. Like, I don't even know what they're doing. But I think that, you know, you started to see some commitments from universities and you saw the coachings, you know, start to elevate. And that obviously helps with players and the style of basketball. So they're starting to see hopefully the effect of that commitment to making basketball successful and how that impacts everything else you're doing. You know, ironically, if basketball is good, the software gets better. Like it just, because it's, you're, at least with Gonzaga, they're getting a different type of student now than they ever did. A smarter student, more capable student, more resources. And so it's really transformed what the university is able to offer.
One thing I don't think that gets talked about enough, and we didn't even touch on this in any of our questions that we prepared, was a guy like Tommy Lloyd, who probably seeing that international recruitings could become more prevalent for the collegiate ranks, and him bringing in so many good international recruits. I looked at the roster, and there was only one on the team, I believe, during your tenure at Gonzaga. But now you always hear about guys coming in from Canada or different areas over in Europe where, you know, he's in front of them, and you're a household name now.
Yep.
They hear about Gonzaga, but, you know, other coaches from UNC, but they're coming in the door second, and they've already seen Gonzaga's success. So it compounds, right?
It does. And I think, you know, Gonzaga made a commitment early on. It's like, we're not going to get the Jalen Suggs of the early 2000s, right? You might get the Dan Dickow who transferred or the Earl Knight who transferred, maybe the Adam Morrison, who's a diamond in the rough, who just is a phenomenon in and of himself. But you're not necessarily going to get the national players at that level. So they went out and got the international players. And so that filled that gap of that recruiting gap during those years. Now they're getting both. So now they're kind of this, they're spoiled by the who they're able to get in and tell a story around. But then you have to look at the development too. Because it's one thing to get a kid to come from France in Roni Turioff's example. But then you got to make him successful in Spokane. And you got to have some ones that aren't as successful, you know, that come in. Madison Mooninghoff, Kaida, different guys that came in and maybe didn't have that instant success. You got to go through that learning curve and have the support of the university and the administration. But at the end of the day, Coach Few won. You know, he just kept winning with whomever it was. And so it kept the, he's like, hey, what do you want me to do? Just keep doing what I'm doing. And so I think you got to look at the development. I think the other thing that I'd like about Gonzaga is that there is not an example of a college basketball player that they haven't had success with. And what I mean by that is from one and done to fifth-year seniors, to fifth-year transfers, to mid-career transfers, to mid-career redshirts, Kelly Olynyk, to, I mean, just name any form of, from international, national, I mean, any form of a college basketball player's experience, Gonzaga not only has, but can point to one and say, we have a superlative one. You know, we have Nigel Williams-Goss who transferred. We have Kelly Olynyk who redshirted mid-career. We have Kyle Wilcher that came from Kentucky. We have Sabonis that came out. I mean, now we got, Zach Collins, which was a kind of an unofficial one and done because he wasn't necessarily expected to be one and done. And now you got Jalen Suggs, who's coming in for his draft. Like, he's going to be in the NBA next year and should be. But like, there's not an example of one yet. You know, walk-ons, David Stockton's, the Mike Harts. You have fifth-year Corey Kispert this year. I mean, there's not a way to go, a college basketball situation that Gonzaga doesn't have, like, a household name that's going to be like, oh, yeah, it's just like, you know, whoever, you know? And right. So, and international, too. So I think, you know, that's got to be really powerful when coaches are in talking with parents or kids of like, oh, you know, we actually have an experience like you with Jeremy Fargo, who came from Chicago, and then Zach Norvell, who came – or, oh, inner city's not your thing? Then maybe it's, you know, rural America. Or if not that, how about, you know, the south of France? I don't know. They come on. It's fun. So, and then they get everyone to come, and I'm looking outside at a rainy, stormy, we just melt in the snow, like, and then they come to Spokane and just, you know, they get adopted as family members and part of the family, and they enjoy and contribute to that experience.
And Matt, as we transition to life after basketball or what you're doing now, I think it's you've talked about it and probably why you developed Hooptown is Spokane is just inherently, you know, become that sort of mecca for basketball, if you would. I always amount Gonzaga to like the Green Bay Packers of the NFL, right? They're in a small town, but yet it feels like everyone in the town owns a portion of that team and they want them to succeed. And I think probably due to few, but also alumni like yourself who are so passionate about the program, it's you know, going to continue. I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, I think Spokane. So what I'm doing now is I'm the executive director of a nonprofit here in town. It's called Spokane Hoop Fest Association. And Hoop Fest is the largest 3-on-3 basketball tournament in the world. So at the end of June, every June for the last 31 years, minus COVID here last year, but we bring close to 6,000 teams, 24,000 athletes, and we literally shut down 3 square miles of streets and play basketball in the streets of Spokane over a weekend. So imagine Disneyland. It's about the same square footage as Disneyland, but it's Disneyland for basketball. Like it's larger than life. And every walk of life, in 2019, we had 43 states represent our registration, 7 countries. Like it's a global phenomenon in Spokane, Washington. Makes no sense whatsoever. Makes no sense. But it is. It's a thing. And so it started in 1990. So it actually predates all this talk of Gonzaga basketball. So it's not one you say like, hey, Gonzaga happened. So now this thing happens. Like this was big before my time at GU even, which was a long time ago. and so in addition to that great event, this organization's around it. So Spokane AAU, one of the largest AAU, youth AAU clubs in America, comes out of this office. We have an outreach program with our public school district. We support a summer club team traveling, young men trying to play at the collegiate level. We build a courts. We built 32 of our park courts in the region. Like if you drive by a park in our area, you see a Hoop Fest backboard. That's one that we paid for from the proceeds of the event. And so basically, to use your Green Bay Packers example, if Gonzaga is our NBA franchise, like we are becoming the community engagement arm because they can't, right? They can't interact with youth because they're NCAA compliance. So we have been doing this for a long time, but we're trying to become more organized at it, which is where the Hooptown initiative kind of was launched. Hoop Fest is an event. Hooptown is like the citywide. This is what we love. Now, if you give me give me a quick second. I want to explain the Hooptown thing because I think it's an important part of what we're doing. And so I'll give you where it started. A couple of years ago, our Visitors Bureau came to us as a community stakeholder. It's estimated that we do about a $50 million economic impact to the region. I mean, it's basically the Super Bowl every summer for hospitality in our area. Well, they came to us and said, hey, what do you think Spokane stands for? And to your point, I was like, I have connections to Gonzaga basketball. And now I'm involved in this community basketball Hoop Fest and everything else. I'm like, we love basketball. Like we love basketball more than we should. Like we should just be, we're a hometown, right? We should just be it. I use Portland as my example. Keep Portland weird. Like Portland isn't trying to be eccentric and sophisticated. Like they're weird. Like screw it. Let's be weird. Like, why overthink these things? And so like, right. I was like, why overthink it? Like I live it every day. Like I see the impact of basketball. And so then I start thinking about, well, and it's not even just the playing experience. Like that's one part. Like if we were the, you know, turning out NBA talent, that'd be easy. But I'm not talking about just the playing experience. I'm talking about, you know, the most impassioned fan base for Gonzaga basketball is the retirement community. You know, women and men that may never have touched a ball, but they know every Jalen Suggs' younger siblings. They know, you know, hey, we got this recruit, the class of 2033. I'm going like, I don't know, like, what are you talking about? And so, but, you know, you see, and then, like, really what makes Hoop Fest go is the volunteer effort. It takes about 3,000 volunteers to execute that weekend. So now you're not talking about just the sport. You're talking about the connection the sport creates. And that's what Hooptown comes up. How do we grow the game? How do we build the game, the infrastructure for our game and our community? How do we grow the game, more programming, more access for all walks of life? And then how do we love the game? Where do we create that connection between the fan and the game experience that is as meaningful as knocking down a jumper? You know, like, how do we kind of blend all those three things together? And that's what Hooptown came online to do, is to be able to make that investment back into the community in order to create more opportunity to love the game of basketball. I mean, that's the elevator pitch. I appreciate you letting me walk through that one.
No, that's great. Can you tell our listeners, like, where to find out more about Hooptown and Hoopfest online or social media?
Yeah, so all social media at Spokane Hoopfest for the big ones, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm not doing any dance on TikTok yet, but I'm going to, that's part of my resolution, my 2021 resolution. And then at Hooptown USA on the three channels as well. SpokaneHoopFest.net on the web, nothing but net, and then hooptownusa.com on. So that's what we're kind of, it's a mix of a lot of basketball that we're trying to kind of create a story around so that we can build opportunity. Why does Indiana have to be, Indianapolis have to be the basketball mecca for all these tournaments and events? Why can't Spokane host some things? Why can't we look at the G League team? You know, one of our local Northwest NBA teams doesn't have a franchise, a G League franchise. Right. Why can't we represent them? Mm-hmm. So just trying to look at those out of the box opportunities that small towns can do because we're more connected. You know, we may not have as much resource, but we have the passion and the sweat equity and the human capital that really want to take these types of projects on and make them special.
It's awesome work. You had, I think, over, what, 700 career assists at Gonzaga?
I don't know. I'm number two, though. I probably should have corrected you. I was going to let it go for the full hour. Josh Perkins beat
me. Oh, Perkins got you.
A couple years ago, yep. I got to go to the game where he finally broke it, and it's only because he's my daughter's favorite player, my 9-year-old daughter, Stella, his favorite, that it makes it okay. It took him a lot more games, games. And he had a lot more NBA talent around him. So screw that guy, okay? Yeah. Screw that guy. No. Big fan of Perk. So I'm actually number two on the list. Now I'm falling off. It's basically, I mean, hair will start falling out soon. I don't know. Getting old sucks.
You'll still get those beers at Jack and Dan's, Matt. Yeah. Thanks for taking time with us. WSD Podcast, Bulldog Banter with Matt Santangelo. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Check out Hoop Pound. The gear is awesome. That.
Thank you.
I don't know what the emblem or branding is, but I love it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. The Agwin actually is, I'm looking in our, we have a nice park in downtown Spokane, Riverfront Park, and it was for the World Expo in 1974. So the World Expo came to Spokane, Washington. Again, one of those crazy things. And inside the park is this huge pavilion that's kind of an amphitheater underneath it. And I can see it's all lit up with LED lights now. But the emblem, which isn't on this shirt, is actually the pavilion with a basketball sitting on top. And it just looked like a shield. So it's kind of a subtle ode to Spokane, but just kind of a cool emblem. So it worked out really well.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Well, if we find a third, we might see it at Hoop Fest.
Yeah, love it.
In love the loser's it. Bracket.
I might just volunteer.
You're all welcome. Thank you very much. Thanks, Matt.